When God moves through a particular person, sometimes that person just keeps going and going and going. Here's Skip Heitzig.
Don't you think any guy pushing 90 is ready to retire? It's like, just leave me out of this. You know, give me a nice little chalet down by the Euphrates River. Not this guy. He's like the ever-ready bunny. And he's being used still. Verse 1 of chapter 6, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps, to be over the whole kingdom. And over these, three governors whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give an account to them so that the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm.
Make the connection.
Someone once said that people are trapped in history, and history is trapped in them. And that was certainly true of Daniel. Captured by the Babylonians and used mightily by God, Daniel couldn't help but be a part of past events. And more than that, he also shared a glimpse of the future. We'll take a look at the role Daniel played and the history that was in him through the spirit of prophecy today here on The Connection. But before Skip Heitzig gets started, for just $15, you can order a book from Stephen Baldwin called The Unusual Suspect, and here's how you can order.
When Stephen Baldwin was riding the wave of fame from his most successful movie, The Usual Suspects, he thought he was in his glory. Hot in Hollywood, whatever Stephen wanted, Stephen got. But he found a new, more meaningful role in life. That of a Christian, a role more radical than anything Hollywood can offer.
Mostly kids are, you know, out there taking risks and wanting to have fun and this and that. Well, there's no greater risk and no greater thrill and fun than tapping into the most awesome power that exists anywhere, which is God and His Spirit. If you can get a hold of that, there's no skate park, surfboard, kiteboard, snowboard, any board. You know, the ultimate is the Jesus board.
The Connection is offering a book by Stephen Baldwin, The Unusual Suspect, My Calling to the New Hardcore Movement of Faith.
When I became a Christian, I was somebody that was a skydiver and bungee jumper and doing all kinds of stuff that was giving me the maximum potential of the thrill of life. I never thought it would ever be possible that the Holy Spirit could actually be 10 times more gnarly than any of that. There's nothing God likes better than a good challenge.
In The Unusual Suspect, Stephen takes you behind the scenes and tells the stories that haven't been told of celebrity life, a curious family, and a hardcore faith.
I cry out to the Lord with this request. I want you to show me something in this life experience that surprises me. I want to see you do your thing in my existence that I never thought would be possible or never could have anticipated. For me, that's the base jump for Jesus each and every morning. I take the leap and trust in Him.
Get The Unusual Suspect by Stephen Baldwin from The Connection now. Order online at connectionradio.org or by calling 1-800-922-1888.
That book by Stephen Baldwin might make a great gift idea for someone you know that you're reaching out to. Find out more and order it at our website, connectionradio.org, or by calling us at 1-800-922-1888. And we'll cover one of the most familiar stories in the Bible today as we continue through the long career of Daniel. And we'll also get a glimpse of the prophecies he made and just how accurate they were. So stay with us as we continue through the Bible from 30,000 feet.
And make the connection.
Open your Bibles to the book of Daniel, and we'll join Skip Heitzig as he continues this study.
ultimately, the Most High rules in the kingdom of men. And he gives it to whomever he chooses. Now, there's another phrase in Daniel where it says that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives power to even the basest, the lowest, the gnarliest of men. You're not smiling. You're a little bit taken back by that. You're a little bit frightened. You mean that sometimes God allows the wrong person to get into office? Uh-huh. For his own sovereign purpose. And he did that with Israel. And he tells that to Nebuchadnezzar in this book. And they will drive you from men. Your dwelling will be with the beasts. Oh, yeah, I already read that. The Most High dwells in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. So here's what happens the rest of the chapter. That happens. This guy sinks to the level of an animal. He has to go out and live in the field. He lives outside under the stars. He eats grass. His fingernails grow out. His hair grows out. He looks like an animal. There is a condition. It's called insania lycanthropia or zoanthropia. And that is the condition of a person thinking he's an animal like a wolf or an ox. There's mental institutions where people believe they're Batman or Superman. This guy was Ox Boy. And he's out, the king, eating grass out in the field, the human lawnmower, for 7 years until he discovers God is in charge and it's not all about him. Now, from a human standpoint, he had every reason to brag about Babylon. Babylon housed one of the seven wonders of the world. Its walls were thought to be impregnable. Nobody could conquer it. Eventually, it was conquered. I'll explain how in just a moment. He had the hanging gardens built. A hill was built in the center of town. The Euphrates River ran through the middle of the town. A hill was built 400 feet tall, terraced, and watered from the river. A paradise in the middle of the city. In fact, several years ago, Saddam Hussein offered a lot of money to anybody in Babylon who could figure out, or in Iraq, who could figure out how Nebuchadnezzar watered those hanging gardens because he wanted to replicate them. As he was trying to become the new Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar's palace went by the name of the Marvel of Mankind, and also it was called the Dwelling of Majesty. So Nebuchadnezzar, after a period of time, even after the dream, even after the revelation, walks through Babylon going, man, I'm really good. I'm really powerful. I'm like in charge of everything, and it's all because of me. God said, I heard that. 7 years he's out eating grass. And then he finally comes back and he acknowledges that the only true God is Yahweh. Just understand how monumental that is. It's a royal edict that gets published to the empire. Imagine if the president of the United States called a special State of the Union message. Ladies and gentlemen of America, citizens of the world, the other day God spoke to me. All the aides go nuts at that point. Oh, no. Oh, no. He said the G word on TV. And I've discovered that God in heaven rules everything, and he's the most important thing ever. Oh, they go nuts. We got to lock this guy away. He's been on the job too long. There was a time in our country you could say that, but not anymore. And he makes this a monumental statement for all those dwelling in the world, and it was all because of his pride, and he got humbled. In chapter 5 is famous for, we call it supernatural graffiti, right? The whole phrase, you know, see the handwriting on the wall, comes from this chapter. It's the famous story of a man's hand writing on the wall in Babylon. The year is 539 BC. That's an important date for you to remember. 539 BC is the same year Babylon fell, and you're about to see how it fell. You notice who's in charge? A guy, not Nebuchadnezzar, but a guy by the name of Belshazzar. Who's he? He's the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. He's throwing a cocktail party, and he's given a party for 1,000 of his lords in Babylon. They're drinking, and they're drinking. I don't know if you've been around drunk people, but drunk people do and say stupid things. I remember when I was first a Christian, I was going to witness to this guy who was drunk. I didn't know any better. And this guy got really sincere. He started crying.
You're right, man. I love you, brother.
And he prayed the sinner's prayer, and I thought, wow, it was great. The next day, I went to talk to him about his decision. He goes, who are you? Well, don't you remember last night we prayed, who are you? He didn't even remember the episode. And then Belshazzar does something really stupid in his drunken stupor. He says, hey, you know, my grandpa, he conquered Babylon, and he went into that temple and took a lot of the vessels, those holy vessels those Jews used for sacrifices. I got them in a back room. Let me bring them out, and we'll drink our wine in those vessels. Stupid. Because God sees that as a direct challenge. So while they're having this party, all of a sudden, I've stood in this room. It's 55 feet wide by 169 feet long. And at one end is a niche in the wall where the throne sat. And probably right to one side or the other, he saw this handwriting of a man's hand. Verse 5, in the same hour, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall in the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Now, everybody sobers up really quickly about now. You put a whole, it was like a bummer for the whole party. Put a damper on everything. And then the king's countenance changed. Uh-oh. And his thoughts troubled him so that the joints of his hips were loosed and his knees knocked against each other. Now, if you have a King James Bible, you got the best translation for this verse. Because it says something like, his loins were loosed and his knees smote one against another. It's just classic. So with loose loins and smiting knees, this guy knows his number is up. Verse 23. Daniel tells him what's going on. Now, Daniel's 80 years old by the time he comes in. And once again, common scenario, all of the magicians, all of the astrologers, all of Chaldeans look at the handwriting and go, I don't know what that is. So somebody goes, there's a guy named Daniel. He'll tell you everything that's happening. Daniel's 80 years young. He comes in. And he says in verse 23, you have lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. The fingers of the hand were sent from him, and this writing was written. And this is the inscription that was written, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. This is the interpretation of each word. Mene, God has numbered your kingdom. Mene means counted or assessed, and he has finished it. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Peres, so the singular for the plural, Upharsin. Your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. So this is what it means, O king. Numbered, numbered, weighed, divided. And that's the message from God to you, O king. You've been numbered. Your number is up. That's what it means. Your number is up. You've been weighed. You're a lightweight. You're all fluff, king. Your number is up, you're all fluff, you don't amount to much, and God is going to take your kingdom, it's over. Now what he doesn't know is as Daniel's making this interpretation, the kingdom of Babylon is over. At that very moment, the Persians are already inside the city gates, and within hours will assume control over the whole kingdom. So verse 31, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom being about 62 years old. The date, October 12th, 539 BC. King Cyrus gave control to one of his generals named Ugubaru. And Ugubaru took his troops, went outside the city, dammed up the Euphrates River, lowering the level of the river inside the city. According to Herodotus, the Greek historian, to the level of a man's thigh, so they could wade through the river. The huge bronze gates that kept the river closed on top had been left open. They opened the gates after they got under the city, let the rest of the soldiers in, and they took Babylon without a battle. Took it without a battle. Belshazzar is killed October 16th, 4 days later. Chapter 6 opens under new management. Cyrus is in charge. Darius the Mede is the viceroy, given charge over the city. Daniel is 87 years old in this chapter. Okay, now, don't you think any guy pushing 90 is ready to retire? It's like, just leave me out of this. You know, give me a nice little chalet down by the Euphrates River. Not this guy. He's like the ever-ready bunny. And he's being used still. Verse 1 of chapter 6, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps, to be over the whole kingdom. And over these, three governors whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give an account to them so that the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. So the governors and the satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful. Nor was there any error or fault found in him. Why is there jealousy brewing in the hearts of Daniel's colleagues? The answer is found up in verse 3, because Daniel is placed over them. He's the boss of them. They don't want him to be the boss of them. So they're trying to figure a way to scam him out of his position. He's almost 90, and they want to conspire against him. And so they do that. Then these men said, verse 5, we shall not find any charge against Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God. So they passed a law. They go into the king, and they go, look, king, you're the big guy. We all love you. You're cool. You're in charge. So here's the deal. We want to make sure that everybody's on your side, right?
Yeah, right.
So here's the deal. For the next 30 days, anybody praying to any other god besides the right gods of Babylon and you, kill them. Would you sign this decree?
Done.
He signs it. It's irreversible. Law of the Medes and the Persians never changes. Once you sign it into the law, it's law. They did this on purpose. Daniel found out about it. When Daniel knew the document was signed, three times a day, he opened his window so people could see him. He didn't care because it was his custom. And he bowed toward Jerusalem and he prayed to Yahweh, the only true God. They saw that. They report him to the king and he gets tossed into the lion's den. Verse 22. I'm summing up a lot. Daniel thrown into the lion's den. The king cannot sleep all night. He's so troubled. He thinks, oh, I'm so stupid to have signed that thing. But he's hoping, just hoping against hope, that Daniel will somehow survive. He gets up in the morning. Daniel, are you okay? Was your God able to deliver you? He said, piece of cake, king. Don't worry about it. May the king live forever, he said. Verse 22, my God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. Daniel, are you okay? He goes, yeah, you know, the lions are fine. They haven't said a word all night. They're just sleeping very peacefully. Shh, don't wake them. Now, chapter 7 through 12 is the second part of the book. We've briefly gone through the history. 7 through 12 is the appendix to the book. These are prophecies, revelations, predictions of the future from Daniel's time all the way to the coming of Christ. They span Daniel's whole career. Now, Daniel chapter 7 is Daniel's own vision and own version given to him by God of the same dream that Nebuchadnezzar had in chapter 2. Daniel sees in his vision a lion with the wings of an eagle. That pictures Babylon. That was the motif in Babylon. You can still find it in the archaeological digs of the city. A winged lion sat at the gates of the palace of Babylon. The second thing he saw was a bear raised on one side because it was a coalition of the Medo-Persian Empire. The bear represented the second empire, the Medo-Persian Empire that took over the Babylonian Empire. The bear had three ribs in his mouth, symbolizing the three kingdoms it destroyed to become number one. The third kingdom is represented by a leopard that moves very quickly across the landscape. That represents Greece. By the way, all of those kingdoms are named in this chapter. Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece that will bear rule over the whole world. And then the fourth animal that Daniel sees Daniel says, was a dreadful and terrible beast. Chapter 7, verse 17. Those great beasts which are four kings which will arise out of the earth. Now, there's something else, just a little note. In verse 8 of this chapter, there's a little horn that comes up, another horn. He sees the horns representing power, but another little horn, which will represent the Antichrist who is coming. Just don't have time to unravel all of them. Chapter 8. Now, chapter 8, here's chapter 7, okay? Chapter 7 covers from Babylon all the way out. Chapter 8 narrows it and speaks about the transfer of power between kingdom number 2 and kingdom number 3, Medo-Persia and Greece. Remember Medo-Persia in Daniel chapter 2, that polymetallic image was symbolized by silver, right? The chest and arms of silver. And then the third kingdom, the Grecian Empire, was the stomach and thighs of brass. Well, in Daniel chapter 7, it was the bear and the leopard. So those two kingdoms are the ones that are hosted in chapter 8. Now, chapter 8 changes to Hebrew, right? Chapter 1 is Hebrew. Chapter 2, all the way to verse 3 is Hebrew. Beginning in verse 4 of chapter 2, it's Aramaic, the language of the Chaldeans, Babylonians. And now, all the way through chapter 7, Aramaic. Beginning in chapter 8 to the rest of the book, Hebrew. Why? Because you asked me that question. You did. You already asked. Yeah, I'm going to answer it now. Chapter 1 focuses on Israel, Judah, the captivity. They came in and took over the Jews. It's written in Hebrew. Chapter 2, verse 4 deals with Gentile power and Gentile authority, the times of the Gentiles. It's all written in Gentile language, Aramaic. Beginning in chapter 8, it focuses on Israel again and what those nations out there have to do with the Jews from that period of time to the end of time. But because the focus is on the Jewish nation, it goes back to Hebrew. Now, chapter 8, he sees a vision of a ram here, different animal, a ram, that's Medo-Persia. And the ram is defeated by a goat, which is Greece, and the kingdom is divided into four parts. Verse 5, as I was considering, he's seeing this ram going, wow, cool ram. Suddenly a male goat came from the west across the surface of the whole earth, and without touching the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. So this is turbo goat, right? So fast. You've never seen a goat this fast. He just didn't even touch the ground. Just takes over. Now, one of the emblems for the nation of Greece was the Aegis, the goat. You've heard of the Aegean Sea? Really means the goat sea. It was one of the symbols of the Grecian Empire. So it was a notable emblem. Verse 8 of chapter 8. Therefore the male goat grew very great. But when he became strong, the large horn was broken. And in place of it, four notable ones came up toward the four winds of heaven.
In such an uncertain world, it's nice to have a little certainty. You can certainly rely on God to be your fortress and refuge, even in those times when it feels like you're in the lion's den. And because of that, you can also be sure that you'll come out of that den just fine. And that's all the time we have for today. But if you'd like some resources to help you explore in more detail our current series, The Bible from 30,000 Feet, just visit BibleFrom30K.org. And for a copy of today's teaching on CD for just $6, call us at 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org. Plus, if you order for the first time today, we'll also send you a free bonus teaching from Skip called Easter, It's About Time. And that free teaching is available to anyone who contacts us for the first time today. So give us a call at 1-800-922-1888. Or you can also write us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. But no matter how you get in touch with us, if it's your first time to do so, we'll send you that free bonus teaching from Skip. So write today or call 1-800-922-1888.
And make the connection.
We'll continue through the rest of Daniel next time, so join us as we see what this book of the Bible reveals about the future. The Connection is a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.